It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 95%, always is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
Yeah, and we're at 95 because we, as we're recording this, it's almost Halloween. It's the weekend of Halloween, and we went to a Halloween party this weekend that we have yet to recover from.
Yeah.
So I've got what a friend of mine called my soothing voice. This is like my NPR voice.
Yeah, this is, yeah.
This
yeah.
is good. Like
this is like, what would you be? You'd be reporting welcome, on like...
Welcome to Sunday Talk.
Yeah.
We're discussing the new book of poetry from Stephen Brown.
There you go. my poetry slam book. Yeah.
If you'd like to pledge a donation to Caffeinated Comics,
we should get a Patreon page.
Yeah. We should just get a Kickstarter page to do this show better.
Yeah.
So. So speaking of bad decisions, this came up actually during the party last night. I have just begun reading the Spider-Man Clone Saga. I have the complete Spider-Man Clone Saga in my long boxes because I have a complete run of Spider-Man going back to the late 60s, but I've never read them.
Yeah.
I found all the holes.
With good reason.
Yeah, I quit Spider-Man when it was originally being published because it's terrible. If for those of you who don't know what the Clone Saga was, it was a story in 94 where a clone of Spider-Man showed up who was in like half an issue in the 70s and completely forgotten about. He comes back and he's like, hey, I'm a clone. And he creates his own Spider-Man costume and he starts running around. And then in the middle of the story, they're like, oh, actually, the clone's a real Spider-Man and the real Spider-Man's a clone. And goodbye, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then this guy takes over being Spider-Man for like a while. But this also happened in the middle of Marvel's bankruptcy. So the creative team that was working on it got fired halfway through. And the financial department was telling them do not end the Clone Saga because they were afraid it would hurt sales.
Yeah.
And what it ended up doing was hurting sales very, very, very much.
The opposite effect.
Yeah, there's still problems with it. And every decision they made things worse. And it ran for 2 years. So I went through...
And let's be clear, that's not 2 years, 24 issues of comics, 2 years.
No, it's every Spider-Man book for 2 years. At that point, there were four monthly titles.
Four monthly titles.
There was a quarterly book.
Four times 12.
Yep.
Times 3 years.
Like two and a half, I think.
Times
yeah.
two and a half. Least... That's a lot. That's like 80 issues.
Yeah, well, I went through them and I pulled them all out. And to do this, to figure out the reading order, I had to go to Wikipedia and look up the reading order. And
it's then like you're
I
had doing to get research for your comic books.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got some time now. So I pulled out like a box that's like the size of a short box and put all the Clone Saga books in their reading order.
Yeah.
So I can follow it. And then also being me, I found out like which miniseries and specials and one shots I didn't have and immediately went to eBay and bought those too.
Yeah. Question.
Yeah.
So how far in are you? How many issues?
Oh god. I think I'm about maybe 15-20 issues.
Does it make sense?
So far, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's a bad story.
Right.
But
everything makes sense.
Yeah.
You're able to follow it.
Yeah, right now they're clearly two different characters.
Yeah.
And they introduce the clone in like a four-issue storyline with chromium covers because it's the 90s. And then they split them off. So for that 8 months, is it about 8 months? Yeah, four to 8 months, the Scarlet Spider, Ben Reilly, is in Web and Spider-Man, and Peter Parker is in Amazing and Spectacular.
So they each got two books.
They each got two books, and it's one storyline running through them. Now I'm at the point where those are just going to cross over into each other.
The 90s are like, it's like way worse than you remember, like 90s comics.
Yeah.
And it's like if you describe comics, like you just said, like the chromium covers, mm-hmm. it sounds like a bad stereotype of bad comics.
But it actually happened.
But it really happened.
Yeah,
blows my mind.
I was working in a comic store when all this stuff was coming out, and kids were going insane over it.
But I guess it just seems like it wasn't that bad in the 90s, and it's like, no, it was worse. It was worse than you remember. And it's like every bad... it's like I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around just how dumb 90s comics were with all the, like, this bullshit of, like, all right, Spider-Man isn't Spider-Man anymore. This other guy's been Spider-Man. So this guy you've been reading for the last 40 years is clone.
Yeah, that was...
What kind of a fucking thing is that?
That was the big mistake, and I was reading articles about it where they said the original intention was the story was going to last 4 months. It was going to end with Spider-Man 400, and then they were basically going to do to Ben Reilly what they did to Thunderstrike or War Machine or U.S. Agent and be like, all right, there's a second sidekicky version of this hero out there, and then we'll give him his own book.
Yeah.
That was the original plan.
That's not a terrible plan.
No, and all those books were around at that point. War Machine had his own book.
Right.
Thunderstrike had his own book.
U.S. Agent was on the Avengers.
He was on the Avengers, and he got some limited series.
Yeah.
And that was kind of Marvel's thing at the time was to create a secondary version of that character.
And I don't think that that's a completely dumb idea. It's not great,
no.
But it's not terrible.
Yeah, no, it's not the worst idea they could have had. It's just the decisions they made along the way just made it worse and worse and worse. They forced you to read every single book every week.
Yeah.
At that point, I was only reading Amazing, and I was like, I don't want to read these three books with this character I don't like.
Right.
And then they just start throwing in characters left and right. There's like all these villains show up and you don't know who any of them are. And then it turned out like neither did the creative team. There's like Judas Traveler and the Scryer and Dr. Seward and Kane and Spider-Side. And they just started throwing all these guys out and and they were all mysterious. Every shot of these guys is them lurking in the shadows and watching Spider-Man. And you're like, all right, well, what makes any of these people different?
Yeah,
and
or interesting.
They didn't have origins for them. They didn't have motivations for them. They were just... And I just got to a point where...
It's like they just opened up, like, Mark Bagley's, like, high school sketchbook. And we're like, all right, this guy's a character. This guy's a character.
Yeah.
This guy's a character.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I just got to the point where Kane kills Dr. Octopus. Just to show that Kane's powerful, really.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they always do with, like, a new villain. Whenever they come up with a new villain, they're always like, I'm going to show how bad he is. He's going to beat up an old villain.
Established guy.
Yeah, Bane breaks Killer Croc's arms right away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a character that did last.
Right.
But they always...
No, yeah, but that's kind of the thing is, like, how do you show how bad the new dude is? Well, he's got to lay out the previous big bad guy.
Yeah, because he's worse than that guy.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a very lazy... gag in comics.
Right, and it makes the old guy look way worse.
Right, because then it's like, oh, we killed Doc Ock, where's Doc Ock right now? Oh, he's arguably Spider-Man's biggest villain over the Green Goblin, and where's Kane now?
Right. Kane's around. They made Kane the new Scarlet Spider, and they gave him his own series a couple years ago, so he did come back in a way.
But, I mean,
he's probably the one character from that whole run.
A million people in the world and ask them who Doc Ock is and who Kane is, and you're going to get a very different,
I used to have a litmus test to find out when I was young and single, and I would try to find out, how geeky girls were, because at that point, they weren't.
Yeah.
So they were not in comic stores. And I used to say the people say men and women are different, and the only way I really see that men and women are different is that women don't know who Dr. Octopus is.
Yeah.
And I would ask girls in bars.
Right. Do you know who Dr. Octopus is?
And they would always say, I hope it's not you.
Right. please don't tell me you're Dr. Octopus. Yeah.
But once you have a blockbuster film where Alfred Molina is playing Dr. Octopus,
right.
That kind of goes away.
Yeah, that changes it.
But this was this got me thinking as I'm going through this. This is not a good idea. And we can go into the reasons why I'm doing this.
We may.
But it's not a good idea to read the worst Spider-Man story ever written. They just put out an omnibus of this.
Yeah, the Clone Saga is weird because there's the original Clone Saga from, like, what, the 70s with the Jackal and all this stuff?
Yeah, and that's the story that introduces Punisher. So
right.
That's in the 70s.
So they bring it back in the 90s and it does really poorly. Then a couple years ago, they did a Clone Saga miniseries.
That was what the original intention was.
And right.
It was six issues.
Here's what it was supposed to be.
Right.
And what's crazy is like, all right, so in the Clone Saga in the 90s, it's like the creator's like, we have this story and it's going to run for about 4 to 6 months. And then that's it. That's just our one-off story. And then corporate is like, okay, don't end this story. Keep it running because we need to make money. And it bombs and it almost bankrupts the industry and it's widely considered the worst Spider-Man story of all time. Flash forward like 10 years or maybe 15 years. And Brubaker's on Captain America and he says, hey, I got this story. I want to kill Captain America and I want to bring him back in 3 issues. And while he's gone, I want to make Bucky Captain America. And then Marvel says, great idea. Keep Captain America dead for years. And when we bring him back, instead of doing it in your own book like you're intending, we'll make this big like miniseries out of it. And it was terrible.
Yeah.
And like the Bucky as Cap stuff was great. No, it didn't bomb and it didn't go on as long and it wasn't bad. But it's like they still haven't learned from the bullshit Clone Saga. It's like if a writer says, hey, I got this story, I got this idea, but I only have X amount of issues, don't take X amount of issues and draw it out over 4 or 5 years like some kind of asshole.
They did the same thing with Batman, with Nightfall. They made Azrael was supposed to be Batman for 3 issues and they stretched that out to 9. They didn't stretch it out to 18.
Right, but still, it's like
But again, Azrael was Batman in every book to the point where when they did a Batman Punisher crossover between the two companies,
it was Azrael
because he was Batman at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's always this trope of let's get rid of the hero and put a copy of him in there
and then
see what happens
right.
to him. And sometimes it works. Superior Spider-Man works.
I was going to say, Superior Spider-Man was great. They're doing it with Dr. Doom as Iron Man now and
right.
Infamous Iron Man or whatever it is. And it just started. I don't know how it is. I only read the first issue and it wasn't great because it's Bendis. But like, it just seems like a dumb, overused thing that you think they would have learned by now.
Always. I mean, you always have that story of the hero quitting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Amazing Spider-Man number 50 is like that. It's got that classic cover.
Yeah, and you know why that was Spider-Man great? Because it was the fucking first time they did it, and it was awesome.
Also, the first appearance of the Kingpin is that issue.
Oh, is it? Yep. There you go. See?
So that it's more expensive than I want to pay for
it. Yeah, it's definitely, it's going to cost a pretty penny. So you're reading this because
I'm reading this because I'm
in a Spider-Man mood.
Yeah, and
I love that extends to I'm in a Spider-Man mood instead of like, oh, I want to read good Spider-Man comics. I'll read any Spider-Man comics. It's like I'll read the worst Spider-Man comics. Like I get in a Spider-Man mood. It's like, all right, I'll reread Romita's 90s run with Straczynski or whatever. And then you're just like, nope, fuck it, the Clone Saga. Let's do this.
Well, I haven't read it. And that's a big thing to me is it's like it's almost like they published 100 new comics.
Right.
And it's got this notoriety to it that I feel like, all right, there's a chunk.
I need to know.
There's a chunk of my Spider-Man knowledge that's missing. I've read the Amazing issues just to go through Amazing.
Yeah.
But they didn't make any sense.
Right, without all the other pieces.
Crossovers. Yeah, and I'm also fascinated. We talk about this a lot on the podcast. I'm always fascinated when something really great goes bad.
Yeah.
I have to see how is it that you got it so perfectly and how did you lose that?
Right.
Like, you know, I'm fascinated by like season 9 of the X-Files, you know, without Mulder.
Yeah.
the last few seasons of Voyager. I love to see terrible, terrible things done with the characters I love. I'm partially loyal, so if I really care about a character, I just care about them, and like I'll go through the horrible things with them. You know, like I'll watch the Star Wars prequels over and over again.
Yeah, I think that's like that's a fair. I think more people do that than maybe people are willing to admit. Like, I do that with, like, Avengers.
Yeah.
Really, no matter how bad that book is, I'll probably be reading it monthly forever.
Is there a run of Avengers you haven't read?
Sure. Like, The Initiative. I never read Avengers Initiative, which is, like, the 50-state thing after Civil War.
Right.
And I don't read a lot of, like, the new stuff. Pretty much once the movies come out, there's too much bullshit Avengers books. Yeah. I'll always read the one monthly mainstream book, but like New Avengers, I don't read because it's like.
But is there an era? Like, have you read?
I've read
everything from the '60s up. Like, have you read all the '70s, all the '80s?
Yeah, after I got that flash drive from those digital comics. I read, I probably, you know what, I got as far.
Which was legal at the time. They put out a DVD.
Yeah, that was
ROM
a DVD. Yeah, I just had the files. I read Avengers all the way up until like 1994, like right around the time of like...
Right when the Clone Saga happened.
Yeah, no, but like I stopped before like any of the Onslaught stuff happened. And then whenever Liefeld comes on and they give him the book, I'll never read that. Ever. Ever. I'll never read it. I've seen it. I know what it looks like. I'll never read that.
I do have the premiere hardcovers of his X-Force run.
That's embarrassing.
I did not go back and buy the omnibus, but I have and I have the two after that that have like Capullo's early stuff.
Yeah,
I like Cable. I like Cable and Deadpool. And Deadpool's lasted. If he's given nothing else to comics, he's given it Deadpool.
Yeah, I mean, he gave us the visual for Deadpool. I wouldn't credit him with the
character.
Yeah,
no, and Deadpool. We talked to Fabian, and you can listen to that episode, and he says exactly what he did and exactly what Liefeld did.
Yeah.
But this started me thinking about bigger things of, like, the bad roads you willfully go down in terms of your geekdom. Like, what is the money you shouldn't spend that you do spend? What are the books you won't quit? What's the movie you sat through?
Yeah.
You know, what are your biggest regrets?
What do you call that? So it's like the... would you think that that's like... What do you call it when it's like a guilty pleasure? Do you think it's like that where it's just like, ah, fuck it. I really like Spider-Man.
Yeah,
or guilty pleasure to be like, if you read the Clone Saga and liked the Clone Saga, that would be like a guilty pleasure.
That would be a guilty pleasure. I think we can definitely get into that. I also think it's like, you know you're hating it. And you're there, and you're hating it.
Yeah.
And you feel like, well...
That's like you watching Gotham every week.
Yeah, exactly. It was like going to Batman versus, Batman versus Superman was like that.
Yeah.
Was like, I'm doing it. This is horrible. I'm doing it. It's like watching every game of your team while they're losing.
Right.
And like...
like the Cubs for the last two nights.
Yeah. Well, as we're recording this, the World Series is going on. Everybody's very, very excited about the World Series.
Yeah.
Because the Cubs haven't been in, what, like 75 years, is it?
They haven't been in the World Series since 1940-something, and they haven't won the World Series since, like, 1908. So it's been over 100 years. The current roster of the Cubs, their parents weren't born the last time the Cubs were in the World Series.
We were fighting Hitler. The last time they were in the World Series.
Thomas Edison was still alive the last time they won the World Series.
Light bulbs were still kind of new.
Yeah. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, so, but there is that feeling of, you know, year after year after year of Cubs fans just going, yeah.
The lovable losers.
It's not going to happen.
Next year.
But they're
year.
Still going to Wrigley Field. They're still watching the game. They're still talking about it. And
yeah.
It's made me realize as we're in Chicago and seeing the whole city just build to a fever pitch. It's kind of been nice that I've had this week off, so I'm not in the city dealing
with
it.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. I talked to my brothers in D.C., and I asked them, because that's what we're seeing here. But the Cubs are the most popular team in baseball. Not just because of this year, but like I guess they were shown on TV more than any other team like back in the day.
Really?
So they're the most popular team in baseball. And I guess, like, it's kind of all over. Everyone's like, because David said, like, D.C., it's like, yep, that's all we hear about is, like, the Cubs are this, the Cubs that.
Well, because it's that long run.
Right.
I would have thought that the Yankees would have been way up there, but I'm also coming from New York.
Yeah, that's what I would
have
thought,
too. The Yankees tend to win a
lot, too. Right.
So, like, in fact, in New York, Mets fans hate the Yankees fans because they win, which doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Right.
Like,
sports are a weird thing.
I hate you winners.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get them.
Well, I don't begrudge anyone who's into sports because I feel like it's just a different thing than what I'm doing with comic books.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's why, like...
What bothers me is... A guy who dresses up as Darth Vader and goes to a comic book convention is a nerd, and who plays D&D, that's a nerd. But a guy who plays fantasy football and, like, paints his face to look like a sports guy and then wears, like, a jersey with another dude's name on his back, that dude is a totally normal, functioning...
I think that's changing.
It is a little, it's just like...
People get so excited about cosplay now.
Right.
That I feel like that's not seen as shameful anymore.
We shouldn't be shaming people for what they're into.
Right.
I'm a big non-shamer.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I'm just not into sports. Growing up, I was the shortest, palest, skinniest kid. I wasn't good at any of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, in gym class, all I wanted to do was sit on the bleachers and talk about Star Wars.
Right.
And I was like, all right, well, we're outside. That was about it. I'm not the most athletic type.
Yeah.
I can walk really far and I can pick up a couch.
Right, yeah. You could do everything you need to do to function as like an adult.
Yeah, I know. I'm fine. I'm not frail, but yeah. I just don't see the purpose of running back and forth. Ben asked me yesterday, he's like, do you like any sports? I'm like, boxing.
Yeah.
Because it's basically like a superhero fight.
Right. So yeah, so like shitty decisions in comics.
Yeah, shitty decisions.
Like, pretty much every book I bought from the age of 16 to 22, maybe, was dumb. Because, you know, you work at a comic book store and then they're like, hey, you want to work for store credit because we can't afford to pay you cash?
Wow, really?
And then I was like, sure, that's fine. And you would not believe the amount of
that's
shitty
like
comics
bartending
you get.
For beer.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. But when you're 17, you don't have student loans. The fuck do you know? You know, I was like, yeah, that sounds great. You're going to pay me in comic books.
My store in college was Bulletproof, which is still there. Hank would pay me out of the register at the end of the day.
Yeah.
For a while, I was only working Wednesdays. So he would just give me like a handful of 20s or something for whatever it was that day. And then I would give him my books and he would weigh them in his hands.
Yeah.
It was great. He'd have the money here in one hand and then he had the books and he'd just kind of do them like a scale and he goes, it feels like about $6.
Yeah.
And then he would go, all right, take $6 out of that money pile.
Did he know that the comic books had prices on the covers?
Yeah, but he was just estimating what the employee discount was for that.
He couldn't just get like a flat percentage or something for that.
No.
It's awesome. No. That's how I'm gonna start doing it.
He was a single owner.
Yeah.
but yeah, like what would you say? All right, so when you were getting store credit, what's the worst thing you bought in comics?
Yeah, I don't really know what the worst thing I've bought is, but things that jump out are like any like shitty miniseries. Either the big two companies did. I was just like, sure, 6 issues. I'll read a Thanos miniseries for 4 issues. Sure. And it wasn't like now when they're trying to make Thanos into this thing or give him all this big backstory. It was like really, really shitty. It was like
only Jim Starlin cared about.
Yeah, Thanos. It was like Jim Starlin writing a book where Thanos is wandering around dressed as a monk on a planet talking to plants.
Oh,
and it's like, fuck am I? But I read every issue. Every issue. I was all in. I was like, let's fucking do it. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is just the staggering amount of miniseries I bought.
Yeah.
Just because it was like, oh, I can get the whole thing. Like, I have a Prowler miniseries from the 90s. It's 4 issues, and the Prowler fights an evil Prowler. Like, somebody steals his gear and dresses in all purple.
So couldn't even be bothered to come up with a villain.
Nothing. They were just like, yeah, just a copycat. Well, so you know, it's like stuff like that.
The Prowler, that leads me to one of the dumbest things I did is I bought a complete run of Spawn twice.
Yeah.
Sold it, decided years later, wanted it again, bought it on eBay. And then about 2 years ago, Half Price Books had a full run in a long box in the back. And I was like, no, I'm not doing this a third time.
So you've only done it twice.
I have done it twice. Like, yeah. I was reading it monthly to about issue 50 and then I quit. And then about 5 years later, I saw 1 to 100 on eBay.
Yeah.
And bought it again.
Yeah.
And Spawn was a book. It was very popular in the day. Now it's a relic. I mean, we've talked about this because we've talked about McFarlane a few times. There was a point where it was the number one selling comic. It was beating X-Men.
Yep. And it's fucking crazy.
How many issues do you get now a month?
I get one. I don't even get a shelf
The last time
anymore.
I asked you, it was two.
Yeah.
So you dropped
one. We used to do one for the shelf. And we stopped because it wasn't selling. And I've got all the back issues from like the last like 8 or 9 months probably sitting on the shelf. And we just stopped ordering. And that's a book. It's a, you know, it's like Savage Dragon. It never hit the heights of Savage Dragon, but in the sense where what's his name does that book every month.
Right.
He probably sells, if he sells 100,000 copies of it worldwide, no. I'd be shocked.
No, I mean, Batman is selling 100,000 copies.
Well, they said if a book now sells 300,000 copies, that's like the height. Books don't do more than that. Like Black Panther, when they relaunched it with the number one, sold 300,000 copies.
Wow.
So like Frank Miller's Dark Knight Master Race bullshit, whatever he's doing, that will sell 300,000 copies. You know, some of the DC number ones did that. I'm sure Civil War II number one did that. If he's selling 20,000 Savage Dragon, I'd be surprised.
Yeah. Savage Dragon, I have some respect for, because whenever I pick it up and look through it, and it's never been a book I consistently collected.
Yeah.
I read it now and then, but honestly, I didn't really buy it. Like when I worked in a comic store, I would read it.
Yeah.
When there was downtime, put it back on the shelf. But I always got the feeling that Eric Larson really cared.
Well, that's the thing. And to some extent, Todd McFarlane could die in a fire, and I wouldn't really be terribly upset. But if you like what you're doing, it's the same thing with like Liefeld. I don't like these guys. Larson, I don't mind as much because I don't think he has the ego the other two idiots have. But it's like,
but he seems to really love comics.
And I think that's the thing. If you love what you do, good on you, dude. You know, if you're just looking to make a paycheck and you don't care about the fans, you don't care about, you know, your character, it's just a means to an end. That's fine too, but it's just
and that's what Spawn was I kept getting roped into it because I was such a big fan of his Spider-Man run.
Yeah.
Which I still like the art. Uh-huh. His writing's not good, but the Michelinie stuff is at least okay. But there was no story. There was like Spawn was basically a bunch of things that he did well, all in one character.
Yeah.
And it would just have fights. And that was pretty much it. And it always seemed like the story was going to go somewhere. And I kept coming back. And I'm like, this time it's really going to... And it was like a bait and switch every month.
Yeah.
Like, this time he's really going to move this character ahead. And when I was trying to break into comics, I was like, I should go work for Todd McFarlane because I could plot out a story and I could take this character somewhere because he's just going in circles right now.
Right.
And I loved that character because I liked his style. And then Capullo came on and I love Capullo to this day. So it always had really good art, but I was never an artist. I was a writer.
Yeah.
So it was always frustrating, but I kept coming back. And I had, you know, bins of the figures. And I saw the movie in the theater.
Yeah.
It was horrible. The guy directed that never directed another thing ever again.
Yeah.
It would... Even at the time, it was one of the worst superhero movies.
Yeah.
And it came out around the time of like Batman and Robin and Steel, and that was it.
Yeah. Remember Steel?
Yes, with Shaq.
Yeah. Did Shaq also play Kazam?
Yes, he did.
Yes. I'm like that for a while. Shaq was just like, I'm going to be a superhero. And like would just do superhero movies.
Yeah, there was that thing in the late 90s. We were talking about this going back to sports about like when basketball was the biggest thing in the entire world.
Yeah.
And just like... And these guys were just making movies.
Yeah.
Just because.
Remember Space Jam?
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
It was just Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny. It was based on like a commercial they did.
Yeah.
Joe Dante directed it.
Yeah.
Who did Gremlins?
Bill Murray was in that.
Bill Murray's in it.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
No, it isn't.
I think it's a good movie. Yeah. I'll rewatch it and get back to you.
Because it's in the mid to late 90s. Is that why you think it's a great movie?
Maybe.
But Shaq was making movies. None of these guys could act. Charles Barkley was like fighting Godzilla in a comic. These guys were like. They were huge, and that doesn't exist in basketball anymore. And it's as a non-sports fan, I'm kind of interested because it seemed like it was going back to football, but now football's mired in all this controversy with concussions and things like that. That people are really turning against football. So I don't know. I mean, we're in the World Series, but it doesn't seem like baseball's any bigger than it was.
Yeah,
you know. The last time I remember baseball being really big was like with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa because they were breaking records.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the next big sport is going to be.
Or at least what's going to take like the national.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be a new sport.
No, it seems like it just cycles. It's
not like Hi-Li is going to take over. But it does cycle around those three. And it seems like it's still with football, but that's waning.
Yeah, and I think it's baseball because that's all anyone's talking about. But but
that's right now.
That's
the
World Series.
And it's local.
2 weeks from now, what are they going to be talking about? You know.
Yeah, but and that's what Todd McFarlane did. Was it became very clear that he really cared about sports, which seemed just disingenuine to comic fans. I like he bought Mark McGwire's ball for $3 million, and then it was immediately devalued because he got another home run.
Yeah.
And, you know, he started making sports figures.
Yeah, he's got that line of figures. He still does it, I think.
Does he? Yeah, I don't even know what McFarlane does outside of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I mean, Walking Dead saved all of Image.
Right.
Because it came from them. They've still got their claws in it, basically.
Yeah.
Which is why McFarlane makes Walking Dead figures and not Hasbro or Nika
or Spawn figures.
Yeah, and every now and then there's some Spawn figures. Every now and then. Yeah,
it's like every couple years he remembers.
Just to keep that IP alive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kept getting... It was one of those things I kept getting pulled into, and it was one... Like you said, it would go from guilty pleasure to just hate Reed.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, oh, this art looks really cool. Oh, I could see so much potential in that character.
Yeah.
That's what drove me crazy.
Yeah, I think that's like the frustrating thing with these guys that create this stuff is like clearly McFarlane doesn't have a lot of ideas, original ideas at least.
Or care.
Yeah, or care enough, you know.
He didn't love comics. He didn't love those kind of characters, so he didn't really think too deeply into any of his own.
Right, so all his characters are just like these weird pale imitations of like...
Right, I mean, Spawn is Batman and Spider-Man mixed together.
Yeah, you know, with a little Ghost Rider thrown in for good measure with like devil, demon shit or whatever.
Right. But that was a place I went back to. Do you have a?
I think now it's like I'm at the point now, and this is something I should have done, I wish I would have been more conscious of this as like a young person, so I didn't have so many fucking comic books everywhere. If I had my stack of books on a Wednesday, if I ever pick up a book and sigh, I shouldn't read that book. Do you know what I mean? It's like if it feels like, ugh, I have to read, you know, Aquaman or whatever. It's just like, well, if it's a chore, why am I reading Aquaman? Do you know what I'm saying?
And putting money into it, because I came to that conclusion with my DVR, was I got to a point with, like, Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, let's go watch Clone Wars. And I'm like, nobody's forcing you to watch Clone Wars.
Right.
And then I quit, and I never looked back. And now people are saying Rebels is good, and I took a look at Rebels. I'm like, well, it's just like Clone Wars.
Right.
And I can't get into it. And Ben's not into it, so I can't watch it with him.
Yeah.
Like, we'll watch Ultimate Spider-Man together because he's into it.
Right.
But when something's that kid-focused, I can't watch it alone.
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of the thing. It's like a good, it's like a, I think maybe a lesson every geek has to learn is like, at what point do you realize that you don't have to be doing this stuff, right? It's like you go to the comic book store every Wednesday, you get your books every Wednesday. But I wouldn't like quitting books is like a, was like a weird thing when I was a kid. It's like, oh, I don't want to quit this because then what if it gets good and I'll miss it?
And I've done that. Like I quit X-Men right before Jim Lee showed up.
Yeah.
And then it was impossible to get those issues again. And I eventually just got the omnibus.
Yeah.
And like for years I was kicking myself because when I came back when they were gone, like Image had already started. So you don't want to, there is that fear of missing out.
Right. And I think now at least the way I look at it is, I try to be aware of most of the stuff that's coming into the store, what's going on with the two major companies. So when customers ask questions, you can at least give them a heads up. But when it comes to like my own reading, it's like a lot of it is if I'm sighing, I'm going to put the book. I'm not even going to read it. It's all drop books like nothing now.
Like there's a good Johnny Cochran quote in there. If you sigh, don't buy.
Right. But then like it's because there's so much older stuff to read still that it's like I don't have time to read every garbage book the two big companies are going to put out. Right. And to more to that point with DC now, they're doing that Rebirth. Flash is a great book right now.
Is it?
I love it, but it's twice a month. I stopped reading it because I don't have time to read two monthly comics a month. Do you know what I mean? It's like I need one Flash book. I need one Batman book.
I'm feeling that way about Batman, which usually I buy almost everything, but I'm like, you know, Batman and Detective twice a month is too much.
It's crazy.
And neither of them is that amazing.
Yeah, and
Tom King looks like he's got a lot of potential in this new story that kicked off. Actually grabbed my interest, but like I've been reading both books, like just again sighing, just oh okay,
yeah.
And like I was gonna quit Nightwing, but then they did a crossover, so why have a hole before that crossover? Again, habit counts for a lot of it.
Do you think you're getting like tricked into buying it with like crossovers and not wanting to have holes?
I remember
the
there was
collection.
A lot of backlash about that in the 90s. And again, as I'm reading the Clone Saga, I'm like, I'm reading books from creative teams that I don't like.
Yeah.
And that I didn't like at the time. And it was the reason I didn't read that book. Like, I loved Spider-Man, but I stopped reading Web of Spider-Man in like 87.
Yeah.
And I resented that in 94 they were trying to get me to read Web of Spider-Man again.
Yeah.
So I do think that's annoying, because then I got into a habit of just skipping. I would skip the crossovers. I wouldn't buy the miniseries if it was miniseries based, and then I would skip the issues that dealt with that miniseries.
Right.
But sometimes that left a hole. Well, first of all, it definitely left a hole in the box. But then sometimes the writer, because he resents having to do the company crossover, will like devote a few pages to keeping their own plot going.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. They should. I don't mind people. I always kind of like the idea. I think if I was a writer and I had my story all plotted out for the year, and then they're like, all right, you have to do a tie-in to Civil War II. It's like, all right, like, challenge accepted. Like, you kind of have to figure out, I think, you have to play ball. Right. You have to figure out how to work that stuff into your run. And that's part of the game, you know.
But a lot of writers will end up quitting because of that. I know Peter David, I know, quit both X-Factor and Hulk because the crossovers kept changing the direction of his book. So he kept having to like scrap all these stories.
Yeah.
Because they would be like, you know what? All the other heroes are dead. So Hulk's going to be by himself. And he's like, well, that's not the story I'm writing.
Right.
So he'd have to completely rewrite all the time. And then eventually he just got fed up.
Right.
So with X-Factor, he said he can never really write a story because he'd get like three issues in and here's another crossover.
Yeah. He got roped into him constantly. I was reading X-Factor. It was the only X-Men book I was reading at the time. And I think, you know, it's stuff like that. That's like, character fatigue. I might just be making this up. It seems like this is a
real thing.
Where, like, Green Lantern's a great example for this. Under Geoff Johns, I was reading Green Lantern up until, like, Blackest Night, and then kind of got bored with what Geoff Johns is doing.
Yeah, I was reading him until New 52.
Yeah. And I've got all the Omnibuses collects his entire run. So eventually I will read it all the way through as soon as I get to it. But I won't stick with Green Lantern now for more than like 2 or 3 months. I'll try out whatever new book they come out with, and then I give up on it. And it just feels like there isn't really anywhere anyone's gonna go that's interesting with Green Lantern. I've got like a couple years. It seems like from the industry point of view, there'll be a couple years before Green Lantern's interesting again.
Yeah.
You know, they gave him this like weird gauntlet for a while. He had this long hair. He was wearing a trench coat. They don't really know what to do with Hal Jordan anymore.
Didn't know what to do with him before. I think it was Geoff Johns who brought him back. It was Kyle Rayner before Geoff Johns showed up.
Right, and that's what I'm saying is I think he's the character it's cycles, right? So yeah. he was a great character in the 70s when Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams were working on him. In the 80s and the 90s, they really lost track of him. They didn't know what to do with him, so they killed him, made him a villain, right? They replace him. Then they bring him back. He's vibrant. He's popular. He's great. He's doing great again for 10 years. That rides. And now he's back to the point of...
But even Geoff Johns gave up on him because for the New 52 run, Sinestro was Green Lantern and Hal didn't have a ring. Again, which is where we started this conversation. Let's replace the hero with someone's not as
Same thing,
as
and
good.
I don't ever mind that. I don't think that's a... I think that's kind of a necessary thing we do in comics now, but I think it gets to the point sometimes with characters where it's like Green Lantern's a good example. I'm done with Green Lantern. Yeah. Until there's another big shakeup or something comes along, you know, where it seems like somebody cares about that character. It just seems everyone who's writing it is just, all right, well, I want to work in comics. I don't particularly care about Green Lantern, but that's what they're paying me to do now. So he does Green Lantern, you know?
And that happens all the time.
Right, I mean, X-Men's like that now.
Not everybody who's on it is doing
right,
the work of
the work
career.
They want, right. Or yeah. And it's the same thing with X-Men. X-Men is another example of that. The last time I was reading X-Men Monthly was astonishing. It was great. And then Joss Whedon and John Cassidy left. And there isn't a creative team you could put on that book that's going to hit those highs. You know, you kind of have to let a book die out after a huge creative team comes through because they make such a mark on the character. It's like, you know.
Yeah, and then the lesser creative teams are just trying to ape what the
right
person did. It was like reading Chuck Austin's Uncanny X-Men while Grant Morrison was doing New X-Men. Like, he was desperately trying to make that book live up to what Grant was doing.
Right.
And couldn't do it because who could?
Yeah.
You know, Joss was the only person that could really follow Grant, and he went in a completely different direction.
And that's almost
that
what you
still
have
felt
to
like
do.
A sequel to his book.
Right. And I think that's why that's a good example. It's like Grant Morrison, this huge creative power, comes into X-Men, kind of redefines it, and then sets it in this new trajectory. And a lot of people can't really follow it in even the wake of that book. Then they put Joss Whedon on it, same thing. He does this huge arc, after that, it's just like, you can't, they're very rarely do they keep following this smash hits up with a smash hit. You know, Bendis and Maleev on Daredevil, smash hit. They followed it up with Brubaker and Epting, smash hit.
Right.
The guy after that was, who knows? Do you know? I don't know the guy's name. They did a weird thing. They made Daredevil a demon, and they did the Shadowlands story. It was terrible.
Right.
And then it was bad for a couple years until Mark Waid came in, and Mark Waid did a great run with Chris Samnee and Pablo Rivera and everyone else. And now it's back to Chris Soule, I think, is writing, or whoever's writing it, but it's a junk book. It's a book where it's just like, well, I'll read it next time they reboot it. You know, Iron Man hasn't been good, really, since Fraction got off the book.
And in fact, that's kind of changed my thinking, because I've been going through my collection. I've been home for the first time in, feels like a couple of years. So, I've been running, because between everything I've been doing, like comics have been just kind of like, read them as fast as you can on the train going somewhere else, throw them in the long box, go away. And my back issue collecting has really slowed down, because I'm back to the Silver Age now. So like every book I'm looking at is $30.
Instead of getting a stack of 30 books for $30, you're getting one book for $30.
Right. And to be honest, this is another thing that can be construed as a bad decision. Most of the books I'm looking at, I have reprinted somewhere. Because they're the classic runs where there's omnibuses and there's masterworks and there's at least trades and hardcovers. So I have, I have the first 200 issues of Fantastic Four in Marvel Masterworks. I have the first 200 issues of Spider-Man in omnibus. I have, in fact, those two runs I have in omnibus and Masterworks, and I have original issues.
Yeah.
So,
and digital files.
Oh, yeah. Because I bought all the DVD-ROMs when they were out. So it's like I have this man, this monster, like Fantastic Four 51. I have like four different times in my house.
Yeah.
But like each one of them I don't want to get rid of. Oh, because the Omnibus is really nicely reprinted. And the Masterworks is a straight run on the shelf. I don't want to start my Masterworks with number 14.
Right.
And then the original issue, oh, but it's a piece of history to have that original issue.
Right.
But that becomes a struggle when you're looking at like Fantastic Four number 32 for $40. I'm like, do I really want to spend $40 on a book that I have twice?
Right.
And that's where that feeling of wanting not to miss out on something comes back into play, because I'm not going to read the original issue. I'm kind of going to be too careful to touch it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just in the box to be
in
the
box. It's more of like a collecting thing.
Yeah, and I have these straight runs. I have like 30, 40 years of Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and Batman and Green Lantern and Iron Man. And I was looking at those runs the other day, and I'm like, well, do I really need – do I need a run of Iron Man from 1970 to 2016? I just quit Iron Man when they rebooted it. Yeah. And honestly, the last three runs I could just get rid of.
And that's, I guess that's what we're saying, is this like, you know, if Iron Man's a book that's,
If you saw, don't buy.
It hasn't been good since Fraction left. Or maybe not necessarily that. Maybe Fraction's run was extra good. You know, it was better than that book normally is. And it was the entire run was a solid run. And no one's really been on and done as long or as good a run since then.
And I've read everything.
Yeah.
So the run before it was terrible, and the run after it was terrible. In fact, Fraction's run was so good that was launched as the second title.
And took over.
Yeah, it took over because they launched it as the second title to prepare for the first movie. But then it was so good that they canceled the original title and then just switched the numbering over.
Yeah.
And it's a really complicated numbering. So they did like, because Fraction wrote like Iron Man 500, and they had to like add up the two monthly titles together to get it.
And they usually do that for any of the books. Like when Spider-Man gets renumbered for 800 or whatever the next milestone book is, they'll count all of Superior, all of Amazing, no matter how many times it's been rebooted, you know?
Right, and is there such a thing as a straight run anymore when you have a new number one every 2 years?
Right.
I mean, you know, Dan Slott's had like three Spider-Man number ones. Like, you're not even changing the creative team.
Right.
And you've rebooted that
And they're
title.
Just rebooting it just because all the titles are getting rebooted. So it's like the thing we do in this day and
all
age
the
now.
All the titles are getting rebooted, and he has a new storyline.
Yeah.
It's basically a new story direction. So we'll
Spider-Man's going to be rich and have a corporation and go all over the world. It's like, all right, that's a whole new direction for the book, new number one. And, you know, same thing. What Dan Slott at some point is going to wrap up his run on Spider-Man, right? Whether it's next year or 2 years or 3 years from now, at some point he won't be writing that book anymore. It's been so good for so long, once he's off that book,
who's gonna follow it?
I'm probably gonna leave, you know?
Yeah, but you know, sometimes they go from strength to strength. Like we just mentioned Grant Morrison to Joss Whedon.
But I think that's...
Batman went right from Grant Morrison to Scott Snyder.
Right, and I think it happens, and it happens more frequently on your main characters. Yeah.
And Spider-Man went from Straczynski. Straczynski's run, the first half is great.
I like his run, yeah.
The end of the run is terrible.
Right, well, it gets...
When Diodato comes on, and you know, Gwen Stacy's pregnant with Norman Osborn's child, Jesus. It gets really bad.
Yeah.
But then they replaced that with Brand New Day, which was like Mark Waid and Greg Rucka and Dan Slott, and they were rotating it, and that stuff was great. And then Slott was so good that they had just ended up giving him everything, and he's been great for, God, you know, he's been on the book, if you count...
Going on like 5 years.
No, if you count... When he was part of the rotating Brand New Day?
Yeah.
It's like 7-8 years.
Right. So, yeah, even more. And I guess that's what I'm saying is, like, you know, the major characters, more often than not, they try to put their A-list team on it.
Right. And those are the characters people want to work on anyway.
Right.
So they usually have a lot of passion for that.
You know, it's,
you know,
like...
More people want to write Spider-Man than want to write Rocket Raccoon.
Right. And the same thing, like, Fantastic Four is like that, where it's like there's...
There's no Fantastic Four right now.
Well, that's right, but it's like the last good run on that was Hickman's, and the last good run before that was Mark Waid, and the last good run, you know, it's like it's
John Byrne and
pockets of great stories with these characters, you know, and that's the thing. It's just like right now I'll read All-Star Batman. Well, that's apparently going to be 12 issues, and then it's going to end. Well, then I'm just done with Batman. I won't be reading a Batman book because there isn't a Batman book. Like when Capullo was on it with Snyder, it was really good. Once those guys are off it, it's just like, all right, well, I'll just wait until the next big thing comes along. You know, right. It's like I don't follow characters so much as I follow the creative
teams. I follow
teams.
Characters, which leads me to some blind alleys. I do feel like Tom King is going to be great in a year or so, but he's getting his feet on this book.
Yeah.
But like each issue is a little better than the last, so he might be the next big thing. But it's not like, I mean, well, Snyder started on Detective, and that was a slow build.
Yeah, and that's
then,
the thing.
But
is
when he moved
like,
on to Batman, that number one was just explosive.
Right, and I think that's the thing is I'll wait until, you know, it's a new relaunch or a new direction or a new creative team comes on. It's like the companies are pretty good about letting you know when this stuff's happening. So, you know, when that Batman number one came out, it didn't sneak up on us. We were familiar with Snyder. You know, we had seen him on Detective. He was kind of up and coming with like American Vampires and all this other stuff he was working on. So it's like there isn't a lot of mystery left as to whether or not a book's going to be kind of a big deal. You know, Superman, the last great Superman story was All-Star Superman. It's 12 issues or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's 12 issues that took 2 years.
Yeah, and it was great and it was beautiful.
It was
and
like 10 years ago.
10 years ago, probably maybe more than that. And now it's one of those, all right, well, I read up that and, you know, I'll just wait for the next big Superman story to come out. You know, I'm not, you know, it's like... Every single book, I think, is like that, where there's just time to leave books behind, you know?
Yeah, and I have a hard time letting go of that. I mean, you know, I have these runs that are terrible. But Fantastic Four is a perfect example where I was looking at these Jack Kirby issues that are worth a lot. And, you know, even in bad condition, like in the kind of condition where you're afraid to open it because you think it's going to rip, is still expensive. And I'm thinking, well, there's no Fantastic Four book now. There hasn't been one for a couple of years. And the great runs I have on my shelf in a bookcase, I literally have a file cabinet of Fantastic Four. And it's like, do I really need that? Do I need 30 years of Green Lantern where we pointed out two runs that are really good?
Right. And that's, I guess, you know, it's that's more like I think I've probably moved past the buying bad runs, but it seems more since you come more from like the character versus the creators.
Well, I also come more from that era of your first issue was 223.
Right.
So it's like, and that was important to me. When I picked that up, I was like, wow, this thing goes back so far.
Yeah.
What are all the things that happened to this character that count? Because it's the same book.
Right.
Like, what are all the things that affected and shaped him? Like, you know, I spent the first couple of years of reading comics just hearing stories about Jean Grey and Gwen Stacy and not knowing who they were.
Right.
And there was a mystery to that because there were no trades.
Yeah, and I actually, I liked it. You know, it used to be a sign of it was a good thing that a comic had a really high number because it meant, oh, it's lasted years.
Right.
Now it's seen as a bad thing. The higher the number, though, it seems like there's the reversal is now true. It's like, oh, if it's number 237, I'll never be able to figure out what's going on because people think
people want to start with number one.
Right.
I think binge watching has started that because people now don't start watching a show in season three.
Right.
Like if you recommend a show when it's in season three, they go, all right, well, where can I stream it so I can start at the beginning? I'm not going to watch next week's episode.
Right.
You know, I'm doing that with, I decided to go back to Flash because they put season two on Netflix. And I watched season one and then, you know, it's okay. I feel like if I was a 24-year-old girl, I would like it a lot more than I do. But I thought, well, maybe I'll go back because it is well done.
Yeah.
And so I started DVRing the new episodes of season three, but I'm not going to watch them until I watch season two.
Right.
And that's the way people watch now, and that's the way people read comics now. You're not gonna find somebody willing to read issue 1-887 as their first book anymore.
Yeah.
They want what's called a jump on point.
Yeah, and to the point now where, you know, Marvel seems to be doing it now, maybe DC will pick it up too, is, you know, Marvel have like Black Panther came out, right, with a number one, it sold great. Now it's on issue like 7 or 8. So there's a big number one on issue 7 or 8, and it says issue 7, and then whatever the story arc is called, like Under Siege, say, is the name of the story arc. They'll be like, Black Panther, Under Siege, number one, new story starts here. They're trying to keep the numbering going, but show people where the new jumping on points are. And it's like, they always kind of try it every couple years, it seemed like they're trying to do something like this, but it seems like they haven't quite figured out how to market it or show that.
Well, because there's two audiences. There's the audience that has been around for years and years and cares, and then there's casual fans that have seen that saw Black Panther in Civil War and they want to find out more about Black Panther.
Right.
And that's been the kind of push and pull. Is we are at a point with Marvel. We've always been at this point with DC. But we are getting to a point at Marvel where continuity doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be reading I've read every Spider-Man. Like from reprints and just reading it since I was a kid. I've read every issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But a villain will show up and I'll be like, hey, I thought that guy was dead. And then I'm just like, nah, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like it used to be, there used to be a page of like, oh, you thought when you dropped me into that furnace, you thought I was dead. But what happened was I grabbed on to the inside of the furnace and I pulled myself out. Now I have a burn on my back and I'm twice as mad at you.
Yeah.
But that would be a full page of like flashback. And now it's just like, oh, I don't know. That guy's got a new costume. And is he the same secret identity? I don't care.
Yeah.
Like Marvel's been around as long as DC was when
when DC stopped caring about continuity.
Yeah, DC never cared about continuity. For a long time, none of their heroes lived in the same universe. You know, the world that Green Lantern lived in didn't have a Flash for a long time. And then they were just like, Justice League, yes, they do.
Right.
So Marvel's at the point now where they're over 50 years old. They got to figure this out. Like, they can't keep going back to these stories that happened in the 70s and 80s because there's less and less people that remember them. I mean, I'm somebody that's read them, and I don't remember them.
Yeah.
Because, you know what, life.
And I think it's something where it's, you know, it's just like I said, I reread all those Avengers. So, like, about 400 out of the first 500 issues of Avengers I've read, because there's maybe 100 there I didn't read. Maybe less. It's probably more like 50 I haven't read because of fucking Liefeld and these other idiots. You can't reference stuff. You know, like, when was the last time you saw them? They don't do it anymore for, like, stuff that happened years ago. Like, they'll do an asterisk in Dan Slott's Spider-Man book, and it'll be like, remember this guy? And it'll reference a book that happened...
that he wrote.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, yeah, this is in Dan Slott. Dan Slott doesn't write anything, and then it's like, this guy's from 1986, when Spider-Man fought the Tri-Sentinel, this guy was in the background. Like, they don't do shit like that anymore.
He'll say that in an interview, but nobody cares anymore.
Right.
And you know what? I was reading the Clone Saga today, and I read that issue, and it's not a spoiler because it didn't count, and I already said it, where Dr. Octopus dies.
Yeah.
But, like, in that story, like, Peter's injected with this disease that the owl gave him, or the vulture. The vulture and the owl teamed up, and then he teamed up with Daredevil, and he got this disease. And, like, Doc Ock decides to cure him, and while Spider-Man's passed out, he takes off his mask. And like he finds out he's Peter Parker and he's trying to help him. And as I'm reading this story, I'm like, you know, knowing Superior Spider-Man, this doesn't fit with Superior Spider-Man at all.
Right.
Like the way these characters are relating to each other, it has no connection to that story, which is in the same damn book 20 right. years later. And that's when I started to realize, well, I guess I don't care. I mean, the Clone Saga ends with like Peter and Mary Jane's baby is missing and that baby ain't never coming back.
Right.
And it's like, that's the kind of thing that destroyed that book. But it's like, you know, and they go out of the way to go, well, let's try to bring Scarlet Spider back. Let's try to bring Kane back. Let's just see if they work. Let's bring the Jack up. The Jackal's back right now.
And that's the thing.
And let's just try to make a good story out of them. But let's not even worry about that bad story that they did.
Yeah, I like that. I like that they brought, like, here's the new Jackal, and he's doing cloning. And they, just because a bad story happened in a comics, like, just because there was that awful Clone Saga, doesn't mean they can't grab pieces out of it to use for kindling for another story or fuel for another story, you know? I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
You could turn the books into kindling.
Right, and also keep yourself warm. But I think it's, you know, I like that. Like I said, I think it's, you know, you kind of have to take what came before and make it work without getting bogged down with the specifics of why it wouldn't, those two stories couldn't work. Because it's like, we don't need to know all this Clone Saga shit to understand this new story. It's like, Spider-Man could just have a line, and he has it in these new comics where he's like, oh, Jackal, more clone bullshit. Okay. And we're like, yeah, Spider-Man had a thing with clones back in the day. It's like a thing, it's like a joke now, it's a footnote. You know, they don't have to get so deep into the trenches about, like, what actually happened. It's just, you know, Spider-Man will be hanging out with the Avengers and be like, yeah, fucking clones, am I right? And everyone's like, yeah, sure, clones suck. And it's like, well, fucking, they really do. Spider-Man had a bad couple years with clones, you know?
Yeah, so if it doesn't count anymore, if this continuity is not really affecting the story, why am I reading this?
I think there is, it's like, it's a bit of, like, a fiery car wreck. Do you know, it's like, that's kind of why I keep asking you and other people, like, how's Age of Apocalypse? Because it's like a
Age
big...
Age of Apocalypse was good.
That's what a lot of people say.
Age of Apocalypse is good in a way that the Clone Saga is not. It's the same time. It's probably the last good 90s X-Men story. I have the Omnibus.
Yeah.
It's good because it's self-contained.
Right.
That story ends. And when you have the Omnibus, which they just reprinted.
They reprinted it,
is that
it,
why you're asking people?
Well, yeah, kind of. It's like a...
But that story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. When you close that Omnibus, it's done.
That's over.
There's a companion volume that has like all the books that were part of the universe but not part of that story because it was that big.
Yeah.
There's a great two issues that I wish was in the main Omnibus called X-Universe that shows like, well, what are the Avengers like here?
Yeah.
And it's like Stephen Strange and Iron Man and Peter Parker. None of them were the heroes they were.
Yeah.
It's like a what if storyline that's 1,000 pages long done by top talent.
Yeah. And I, you know, I like that kind of stuff.
I recommend it.
That's kind of why I ask. But it's something like, I think there are stories, not all of them, because like I said, Rob Liefeld on Avengers can go suck it. But I think there are stories where it's just like Batman Odyssey is a great example. We know Batman Odyssey is a train wreck, but it's like, well, how bad is it? It's like All-Star Batman was like that. The first Batman and Robin, the Frank Miller one.
Yeah.
That book, I've never read more of a train wreck book in my life with A-list talent on an A-list character.
Except for Batman Odyssey.
Maybe Batman Odyssey is like a close second, yeah. But All-Star Batman was so entertaining for how like much of a dumpster fire it was. Mm-hmm. And I think there is part of us that we like to see. It's like, all right, Clone Saga, it's notorious, right?
Well, it's like watching Ed Wood.
Exactly like watching Ed Wood.
Yeah, we watch Ed Wood every Halloween, the Tim Burton movie, and I still think it's Tim Burton's best movie. And Tim Burton's another one of those guys. He's made movies that will be some of my favorite movies for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
He's made some terrible movies, too.
Yes, he has.
But I keep going. And I think it is that dumb story. But once I watched Ed Wood, I'm like, now I want to watch Plan 9 again. Now I want to watch Bride of the Monster. Oh, by the way, I found out now that I have Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime, There's like 50 episodes of Mystery Science Theater on Hulu that Netflix doesn't have.
Oh, and one of them
is Bride of the Monster.
Yeah.
And so we watched Ed Wood, and then I put on Bride of the Monster, and Renee was walking by, and I would just grab her, and I'm like, look, look, it's that exact scene.
Yeah. The thing I like, same thing like Ed Wood, we were talking earlier. The guy likes what he does. He believes in it.
Yeah. Even those original movies, I mean, the way Johnny Depp portrays him, it's to the nth degree, which is what's so charming.
Right.
But, like, you can tell when you watch those movies.
Yeah, and I don't ever begrudge that. I like people that like what they do, regardless of whether or not it's complete shit. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably because whatever...
It's not cynical.
Yeah, I don't like cynicism, but I think that's... I respect it in the sense where it's like, I don't particularly care whether or not anyone likes whatever I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? Like with this podcast or the comic or whatever I'm trying to do, I'm just trying to entertain myself. So
How's that going?
Good, good. I mean, I'm still doing this every week, right? So what I'm
You're still entertained.
Right. No one could listen to this show and I'll still do it. But the second this becomes a thing that I don't get entertainment out of for myself anymore, that's it. We're not going to do the show anymore. Now, thankfully, that hasn't happened for us. Because I'm still having a good time. The second this feels like work or gets boring or I don't want to do it, that's it. I don't care if we're making the worst podcast ever. I just care that I like making this podcast.
And on that note, you can subscribe to us on iTunes
Stitcher
and go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Not In My Book for as long as Twitter lasts because I'm reading so many articles about the death of Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, Vine collapsed this week. Vine is no more. And Twitter was supposed to be sold, and the sale didn't go through. There were like four people, including Google, were looking at it.
Oh, wow.
I still love Twitter because I love the fact...
Jokes.
I love jokes, so I can follow every comedian that I like, I can follow every author that I like, I can follow every journalist that I like, and I don't have to be their Facebook friend.
Right. Here's the thing about Twitter. The show's not over. It shouldn't end because...
We're in an hour. The show should be over.
It should be, but it's not because you brought up Twitter. How is it going to end? What's Donald Trump going to use to like tweet out at like 3 in the morning and call people
fat? Starting his own channel.
Is he?
The Trump TV. That's been the rumor for the last couple weeks.
He's going to have his own TV?
He's just trying to parlay the 24-hour coverage into his own channel. Yeah. Into like this web streaming channel.
Where like he just says crazy things and comments on stuff.
Yep, and then hires other people to say crazy things. Like, I could see him giving Alex Jones a job.
If it keeps him away from the White House, let's do it. Let's sign up.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it. We're done.
Yeah. You can also use our Facebook page. We have facebook.com/caffeinatedcomics. That's where we post all the news and announce each new episode, like this one. And then, as I said, you can listen to us on Stitcher and through iTunes or go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com where you can find the reason we didn't do a Halloween show this year.
Yeah.
Because we spent 10 minutes going, well, we've covered that last year. We covered that 2 years ago. We covered that 3 years ago. So if you want to hear us talk about zombies or Ash vs. Evil Dead or Walking Dead or Universal Monsters or slasher films of the 80s, we got it. Go and listen to it. And this will come out after Halloween, but happy Halloween. And if you want to go to a store and buy the Clone Saga Omnibus or the Liefeld Avengers trade or any of these
terrible
Batman Odyssey or All-Star Batman, the first volume, any of these books that have characters you love in books you will not like, you can visit Steven at
19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!